Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Our program was recorded earlier. Mitch McConnell has been in office since 1985 and is now one of the most powerful politicians in the country. But he's not the only U.S. senator from Kentucky to shape the nation in a significant way. Fort Thomas attorney and historian Paul Whelan is the author of a new book exploring the history of senators from the Bluegrass State. I spoke with him earlier. Paul Whelan, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much, Michael.
Well,
appreciate it.
You've written a book that's exploring senators from Kentucky and from 1792 when the state was founded to the present. And I'm wondering, who do you think is the most consequential and why is it Mitch McConnell?
Yeah, well, I never said that.
I'm just kidding. Of course, I'm just kidding. But, you know, Mitch McConnell is the senior senator from Kentucky right now. So I wanted to start with him because I know there are many, many more consequential senators.
Right.
Henry Clay comes to mind, of course, and we'll talk about that. But Mitch McConnell is the senior senator from Kentucky and is often described as the most powerful man in America. So when you're looking at all of the senators across these more than 200 years, what do you learn about the impact that Mitch McConnell has had?
Well, it's very interesting. He has been, I think each era has different leaders, and no one can dispute the fact that Senator McConnell has been the dominant force in Kentucky politics since the year 2000 of the first two decades of the 21st century in Kentucky. And I think nationally, since probably 2010 when he or thereabouts when he became Senate Majority Leader. There is no doubt that he is. But I think for each era of American history, there have been Kentucky U.S. senators who have been influential as much as Senator McConnell. And you're speaking, of course, about Henry Clay was obviously one who was influential in American politics from, I guess, the first 50 years of the 19th century until he died in 1852. Actually, until he was a House member, a Speaker of the House from 1810 to when he became Secretary of State in 1826, and then he returned to the Senate in the 1830s and was pretty much dominant. Unlike Senator McConnell, he had the political wherewithal that he could come in and out of public office without a whole lot of trouble. Meaning, he didn't have to. People just liked Henry Clay in Kentucky, and he was very. You'd almost say he controlled Kentucky, dominated Kentucky politics from about 1820 through the mid-1850s.
And Paul, I wanted to ask about Henry Clay in particular because he's a fascinating character from American history and and certainly Kentucky history. Why did he never become president? It wasn't for a lack of trying.
Right. Probably because, well, first of all, I think there are many reasons why he may not have become president. He made an enemy of Andrew Jackson. And Andrew Jackson at the same time nationally had a considerable following even through the mid-19th century. And so he was not well-liked by the Democrats. There were strong Democrats who opposed Clay because Clay, again, was for the American plan. He was a Whig, although he started out, you know, everybody was on the same ticket. The Whigs had problems getting people elected, except I think the only presidents they got elected were William Henry Harrison and Zachary Taylor, both military folks. And I think that had a lot to do with it. Again, Andrew Jackson was just a stronger candidate. And, of course, Clay, for whatever reason, he did take stands that might have been unpopular. You know, he was responsible for the Missouri Compromise of 1820, although he was not a senator at that time. And of course, the Compromise of 1850. And then he did save Andrew Jackson's administration in respect to the problems with the tariffs in North Carolina. But that's another thing. But Clay, I would say it's because of the conflict between him and Andrew Jackson. Jackson had that much sway. You had two very strong political personalities and followings, and Clay just could not match it.
And we're talking with Paul Whelan, a lawyer from Fort Thomas. He calls himself an amateur historian, but I think he can consider himself professional now because he's got a new book out. It is The Profiles of Kentucky's United States Senators from 1792 to the present. It's expected to be available to the public in early September. And Paul, so we've talked about Mitch McConnell and we talked about Henry Clay. I'm probably not even qualified to call myself an amateur historian, but I would suggest that maybe there are the more famous senators from Kentucky. So who would come after them as third most well-known?
Third most well-known would probably be Alvin Barkley.
Vice president. He rose to vice president.
Right. He was vice president. He was a very interesting fellow, almost as interesting as Clay. Again, he served in Congress first for about in the House from about 1914 through 1926, and then he defeated Senator Ernst, who is from Covington, Kentucky. Covington, he defeated him in the Senate election of 1926. It was somewhat unexpected. Barkley had been defeated in a gubernatorial primary, I believe, in 1923, and had made all sorts of contacts. But in regards to being a powerful Kentucky senator and national figure, I would say you would look at Alvin Barkley, because he was important in getting a lot of FDR's New Deal legislation through the Congress. Additionally, he was responsible, of course, for helping FDR get the war support for World War II through, and he had some responsibility for helping push the Marshall Plan through Congress. He was very influential because a lot of his colleagues eventually became important people, including Congressman Vinson, who was Treasury Secretary under, I believe, Truman and Roosevelt, and he became Chief Justice before Chief Justice Earl Warren. And so Barkley was very influential. He got a lot of things done for Kentucky, you know, Blake Barkley in Western Kentucky.
I was going to say, if you would have asked the question, who's the most consequential senator from Kentucky in any Western Kentucky county, they would most certainly say Alvin Barkley. He's got his name on just about everything over there.
Right. He's got his name on about everything. And if you look out at rural electric cooperatives, he was responsible for those. I mean, a lot of people in Northern Kentucky, use
Owen Electric,
Owen Electric, that's one of his contributions, as well as he got through some of the flood wall legislation after 1936 along the Ohio River, along with Brent Spence in the House.
Okay, so he had the unique experience of having been a United States senator and then becoming vice president under Harry Truman, and then afterwards, he went back to the Senate, right?
Right. He went back. He defeated John Sherman Cooper. But what was interesting in respect to, we're talking about civil rights during this period of time. In 1942, Alvin Barkley pushed, there was the Senate Judiciary Committee pushed legislation approved legislation to eliminate poll taxes on federal elections. And that is one of the things that John Lewis and other civil rights advocates wanted to do away totally with poll taxes in the South, in which they were primarily. And Barclay attempted to do that in the middle of the war, you know, when it came out of the Judiciary Committee to take, you know, that you didn't have to pay a poll tax to vote in a federal election, which means you wouldn't have to pay a poll tax to vote for president, U.S. senator, or U.S. congressman. And he brought it to the thing in order to attempt to end a filibuster and get a quorum together to end the filibuster, he sent the sergeant-at-arms around to the hotel rooms where other U.S. senators were making themselves unavailable so we could get a quorum. In fact, he had a sergeant-at-arms go to the rooms of the senator from Tennessee and arrest him and bring him to the floor so there would be a quorum. So we would have to, you know, we need to think back and give some credit to Alvin Barclay for, you know, attempting to do that. Unfortunately, when it came to a vote on the floor of the Senate, it was defeated. But it was something that, you know, 20 years later, poll taxes were outlawed totally.
And we are talking with Paul Whelan. He's a lawyer from Fort Thomas and a historian whose new book, Profiles of Kentucky's United States Senators from 1792 to the Present, is due out in September. And when we were talking about Alvin Barclay moments ago, you noted that in his first run for the Senate, he defeated Richard P. Ernst, who was from Covington.
Right, Richard.
And a couple years back, you did a presentation on Northern Kentucky History Day about U.S. senators from Northern Kentucky. And I want to spend a little bit of time here in this segment talking about those local guys. Of course, we know Jim Bunning, the Hall of Fame baseball player and longtime congressman and senator from Southgate and Fort Thomas. But there are people like Richard Ernst who emerged from Northern Kentucky to serve in the Senate. And there were several others. So let's talk about the Northern Kentucky ones. And I'll ask the same question that I asked generally of the whole state. Who do you think ended up being the most consequential from our area?
That's a very good question. Probably, of course, Bunning in his time, but I would say John Stevenson probably would have been, because he ended up being the equivalent of the Senate Majority Leader. He was, again, from Covington. He was only a one-term senator. He was not reelected. He was defeated by Bernie Beck of Lexington, but he was one of the first before they had organized caucuses by party. He was the Democratic leadership. I would say he was probably one of the more consequential nationally. The only problem was, I think he didn't get involved as much as he probably could have in the election of 1876, the disputed election of 1876. And I think he was a reporter from the Inquirer did ask him as he got off the train about that election, and he really couldn't make any comments. And that could indicate one of the reasons why he didn't get reelected. Of course, at those times, you were reelected by
the legislatures, right? It wasn't like a direct popular vote.
Right.
And so that was. You're talking about the 1876 presidential election between Republican Rutherford B. Hayes and Democrat Samuel J. Tilden, which was very close and ultimately decided in the Congress, if I'm recalling correctly.
Right, a Congress and a commission. It was a little shady back then.
Yeah. And so what was the penalty then for somebody like the senator from Northern Kentucky who did not publicly express an opinion on the matter?
I think they just didn't think he was that interested, and I think the legislature, of course, by that time, the legislature had elected at that time, a congressman back. And I'll just be real frank about it, congressman back. I mean, you're talking about personalities and he later became a Democratic leader in the Senate. And he was also the first and only the first immigrant to be elected, first and only immigrant to be elected U.S. Senator from Kentucky. He was from Scotland and had been brought up from there.
Oh, well, then just to clarify, then I guess I misunderstood. Beck had already been elected by the legislature before that reporter had asked Stevenson about his position on the election of 1876. Okay, well, that makes a little more sense, I suppose. And we mentioned, of course, and we only have a few minutes left. What can you tell us about John G. Carlisle?
He served only a brief period of time after being a Speaker of the House, U.S. House of Representatives, for maybe almost a decade. Unfortunately for for Senator Carlisle, he served for like about less than 3 years, and it was sort of a holding. He was either wanting to be be appointed to the U.S. Supreme Court, and he was promised in the election of 1892 appointment as Treasury Secretary, as which he's probably the most famous for, as being Secretary of the U.S. Treasury.
And he had a pretty rough stint. I think there's some story, like he was hit with tomatoes or something during a speech. He was run out of town.
Right. That was due to his position on the tariffs. He was considered a Bourbon Democrat rather than, you know, he was Wall Street. You know, he supported Wall Street. In fact, after he left the Treasury Department, he joined a Wall Street firm or law firm.
And we had already, we'd already talked about Senator Stevenson, and this is sort of a protege of Senator Stevenson.
That is correct. And, of course, I think Stevenson was criticized a little bit because he was considered somewhat of a Wall Street type of person, you know, with the moneyed interest. Although Beck was with the moneyed interest, he also had a little more personal appeal. As a senator, as a campaign event, or he was out campaigning, the man, Senator Beck, could shear a sheep in 3 minutes.
I guess that's a handy skill in some circumstances. And we're talking with Paul Whalen, a lawyer from Fort Thomas and a historian whose new book, Profiles of Kentucky's United States Senators from 1792 to the present, is due out in September. And Paul, before we let you go, in recognizing that senators were not directly elected by the people until the early 20th century, that they were selected by the legislature, I'm wondering if you noticed any types emerging over two centuries. What type of people does Kentucky typically send to represent them in the upper chamber of the U.S. Congress?
Generally, we send someone that's obviously ambitious. They're obviously ambitious. Most of them, until recently, have been interested in higher office. Even John G. Carlisle had wanted to be considered for president. Also, they were multi-talented. Most of these folks were multi-talented because they were elected. You know, we've had many presidents appointed Kentucky senators as Secretary of the Treasury, like Carlisle, like George Bibb. Then we also had, in the 20th century, we have Congress, U.S. senators who tend to be more full-time politicians.
Well, we will look forward to reading more of this book. Thank you for sharing what you could with me. This book is coming out in September. It's called Profiles of Kentucky's United States Senators from 1792 to the present. It's written by Fort Thomas resident, lawyer, and so-called amateur historian Paul Whalen. Some fascinating people from the Bluegrass State. Of course, a Senate election in 2020. So good timing on your part. Paul, thank you for the time you gave us.
Thank you, Michael. Have a good vacation.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer of today's show is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.